to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Well, good morning, Columbia CSL. Oh my, and to all those tuning in today, you know, it's a real honor to be sitting right where I am in my home way up in British Columbia, Canada, and be with each one of you as we embark on the exploration of what harvesting our abundance might look and feel like. You know, we have heard, spiritually speaking, that in order to begin the experience of an abundant universe, we must start the flow by giving that which we wish to receive. Now, while this is an ancient truth, if we take a deeper look at what this means, we see that not only are we responsible to sustain the faith we need in order for us to give in times when we are not experiencing this universal abundance, but we are called to receive this abundance by giving thanks for the abundance which is waiting to be revealed through us as that desired external demonstration. Now, we can't give, or receive rather, until we give, but also we can't give until we receive. And to harvest our abundance, we must engage in both practices. So today, as I share some thoughts on harvesting our abundance, I'll address the root of humanity's inherent nature as being philanthropic and touch upon also the laws of reciprocity and cause and effect. So when we think of the word philanthropic, we mostly think of it connected with financial abundance, at least I do, and the giving of it away in service to others, and or a higher cause for the greater good. But let's take a look at the origins of this word philanthropic. You know, it's generally agreed that the word was coined in ancient Greece by a playwright who wrote Prometheus Bound. The author told as a myth how the primitive creatures that were created to be human at first had no knowledge, skills, or culture of any kind. So they lived in caves in the dark, in constant fear for their lives. Zeus, the king of the gods, decided he was going to destroy them. But Prometheus, a titan whose name meant forethought, out of his philanthropos tropos, or humanity-loving character, gave them two empowering, life-enhancing gifts. And they were fire, symbolizing all knowledge, skill, technology, arts, and science, and blind hope or optimism. Now, the two went together. With fire, humans could be optimistic. With optimism, they would use fire constructively to improve the condition of humanity. The new word, philanthropos, combined two words, philos, loving, in the sense of benefiting or caring for, nourishing, and anthropos, human being, in the sense of humanity or humanness. At that mythical point in time, human individuality did not exist because there was no culture, including language, skills, and other differentiating attributes. What Prometheus evidently loved, therefore, was not individual humans or groups of individuals, but humanity as a kind of being, a whole being. He loved human potential. Now, what these proto-humans could become with fire and blind hope was very, very interesting to him. The two gifts, in effect, completed the creation of humankind as a distinctly civilized being. The two gifts, fire and optimism, in effect completed the creation of humankind as a distinctly civilized being. Philanthropia loving what it is to be human, was thought to be the key to and essence of civilization. So the Greeks adopted the love of humanity as an educational idea, whose goal was excellence, the fullest self-development of body, mind, and spirit, which is the essence of liberal education. Love of my humanity. I'm going to segue here to make it a little more personally relevant for me. You know, love of my humanity, I often think, might very well ask me to buy a calculator with a conversion table in it so that I can finally convert the amount I envision would make me a full-fledged philanthropist to the amount I actually have within me right here and right now in which to realize, receive, and reveal this abundant universe in support of others' similar revelations. You know, when we stop to ponder, we realize that there is so much we have been given that we didn't earn or need to be deserving of or worthy of. For instance, we didn't earn anything in this life that really sustains us or makes us feel good, like air, water, the sun, Earth's provisional food supply, our birth. And yet we strive to amass possessions to increase the illusions of our status, security, and power. In doing so, embraced in the illusion of scarcity instead of the belief in universal abundance, we can live lives of entitlement and give little heed to our responsibilities as stewards of our own life, the life of others, or that of the earth. All the while, endlessly reiterating, either internally or verbally, the question, why? Why? You know, in reference to our environmental travesties or our crisis of man's inhumanity to man, our need to know has no doubt uncovered down a couple of levels the money system. And even below this, mesmerizing power that money seems to hold over us is the question, what is it to be human? We have created a separate self, and at the root of our experience in life lies the answer to this question, for from it, our world has been created. And that is, what is the self? Now, Io said in our pre-service prayer together, we are creation with no name. We are the avatars of love. We come to know who we are by looking outside and seeing what we're not. And from there, our need to own, control, and become a person of a thousand faces is critical, often, to our survival. Our survival becomes so precious that we often dishonor others and the expression and discovery of our own true nature. The journey of separation in this world of duality is a part of a much larger process in order that humanity awaken to its true purpose. As moments of global crisis occur and escalate, we have a collective choice. Do we give up the game and awaken, become conscious, self-sustaining, reliant individuals drinking guidance from our spiritual source? Or do we hold on even tighter? Let's imagine we've chosen door number one, becoming conscious, self-sustaining individuals guided by spirit, and step into our philanthropic nature as to our conscious use of the law of giving and receiving. Now, you know, there isn't a religious or spiritual teaching that would argue the truth of the principle that you must give to receive. So, in metaphysical terms, as everything is energy in some stage of formation, then both the causal energy of our motivation or intention back of our giving and the physical act of giving is equally important. More so if they are in congruent or congruence energetically, the giving will yield in even greater proportion blessing, both the giver and receiver. But if the intention, our intention or motivation, is energetically not congruent with the energy in the giving of one's gift, then it will yield in proportion to its incongruent nature. But what happens if we give away that which we wish to receive back? Say we are broke. How can we give away money to receive money? We don't have to, if we don't have money to give, then we may conclude that the principle is an absolute. But principles, by their very nature, are all absolute. In this case, it works by giving something away which has precious value to the giver and is given with a consciousness of not need or lack or want, but of acceptance and gratitude of all that one has and will be given in their own experience. It is the energy of the knowing of faith and gratitude in the mind of the giver which attracts more of what we wish to receive, not the material substance of what we give. So what are we really giving away then? We're giving our faith, our gratitude, our acceptance of our co-creative power with this universe. The form of the gift in giving that which we wish to receive again is not that important. It's the form of our mental and emotional causal energy and how much clarity, conviction, and faith it and our word holds as we give our gift that will affect our life condition. So moving to the second half of the law of giving and receiving, equally important in harvesting our abundance is receiving. Here's a warm, rather early Christmas story that illustrates the broader application of receiving. And sorry to all of those people who are out shopping and going, why are the Christmas decorations out this early? I know, life just moves so fast, doesn't it? Here's the story. In 1974, a man named Philip Kuntz, a sociologist at Brigham Young University, and his family got a record number of Christmas cards. In the weeks before Christmas, they came daily, sometimes by the dozen. Kuntz still has them in his home. He collected them in an old photo album. And they read, "Dear Phil, Joyce, and family, we received your holiday greeting with much joy and enthusiasm. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Love, Lou, Bev, and the children," or some such names. Now, the cards from that year came in all shapes and sizes, but the basic message was the same. The writers wanted Kuntz to know that he and his family were cared for. And also they wanted to share some of their own news. They included pictures of their family members and new homes and smiling graduates with freshly minted diplomas. It all seemed pretty normal, except for one thing. Kuntz didn't know any of them. You see, earlier that year, he decided to do an experiment to see what would happen if he sent Christmas cards to total strangers. And so he went out and collected directories for some nearby towns and picked out around 600 names. He said he started out at a random number and then skipped so many and got to the next one, he said. So to these 600 strangers, Kuntz sent his Christmas greetings, handwritten notes or a card with a note of him and a photo from him and a photo of him and his family. And then Kuntz waited to see what would happen. About 5 days later, responses started filtering back, slowly at first, and then more, until eventually they were coming 12, 15 at a time. Eventually, Kuntz got more than 200 replies. He said he was really surprised by how many responses there were, and surprised by the number of letters that were written, some of them 3 and 4 pages long. Now, why would someone send a 3-page letter to a complete stranger? Why did so many people write him back at all? Ashtavaktar, Ashtavakra Gita says, I am the infinite deep in whom all the worlds appear to rise beyond all form forever still. So am I. We are the avatars of love with extraordinary power to light hearts on fire. And everything, when given or received in gratitude and respect for the mystery of life, creates the very feelings, experiences, and opportunities we desire to harvest, all delivered in loving abundance. Abundance, Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of Science of Mind, says, is a divine equality or quality of the infinite mind that is everywhere present and available for us to claim through our declaration of its existence through thought, word, and deed. Now, this declaration purports that literally, I am enough, and therefore, there is enough. Now, what I have personally come to know is that although the true gift is in the giving, and I don't consciously need or want anything to be returned to me, as I know the law of cause and effect is always working, creating an effect to my every claimed intention, I still have trouble practicing being poised to receive. Can anyone relate to that? I am aware that if I do not receive, I also create a kink in the universal flow of abundance and therefore stunt its energy from flowing in and through me in not just one, but all areas of my life in the same degree. I cannot be joyful in my giving without being joyful in my receiving. I must be congruent in my joy in order to attract and harvest universal abundance. Knowing that there is enough and that prosperity is ever coming to us in equal proportion to our ability to be grateful for all that we have now, we are invited to let go our death grip on the picture of what that material something we see or even imagine looks like. And the answer to our prayers, and keep open at the top in gratitude for the harvest, stating this or something better. Thank you, Spirit. You know, several years back, I had a weekly radio show on Voice America. It was called Minding Your Business, Creating a Sacred Economy. And each week I had new guests. And one guest that still imprints me is Charles Einstein, author of Sacred Economics, who focuses on themes of civilization, consciousness, money, and the human cultural evolution. The premise of his text is drawn from a gift economy, where we are no longer in competition with one another as in our present economy, but rather when we have more than we need, we give it to someone who is in need. As this gratitude and way of being increases, we find ourselves in alignment with the universal law of circulation and the co-creation of intentional community. Now, there are ways to shift a global money system, he teaches us, that really is not working. And in taking responsibility for the role we play as co-creators in our lives, we will don the cape of stewardship. And anything less than coming together in agreement to use our collective wisdom and love to steward the earth and its people at this point in our civilization, he says, just isn't worth trying. Our capacity is not just revealed when push comes to shove or we put the pedal to the metal, as they say. It is about experiencing life from the vantage point of the witness, as conscious conspirators with the laws of the universe to be a co-creator instead of a controller. Our reach, be it thought, be it in word or deed, is our spiritual legacy in the making. Personal sidebar for you. As I was writing this talk, I was remembering that in the earlier days, I was unconsciously very calculating in my giving. Now, some of the time, I was quite spontaneous. Two different behaviors coming from the same motivation, though, to get what I felt I needed or I lacked. Then a time came when I became aware of what I was up to. And the behavior, for the most part, continued under a cloud of growing disdain for myself. Over time, I saw I was involved in affirming short-term gain for long-term pain. And I vowed to move myself through short-term pain for long-term gain into the experience of becoming an inspired and generous person just for the joy of it. Can you see yourself in this evolutionary process of awakening to your own self-worth and capacity? And let's complete that contemplation with applying this capacity to give to yourself, to see and live this idea of the true giver who is so complete within themselves, loving what you do know of yourself and loving what you do not know yet. Philanthropy for the love of humanity, for ours, for our humanity, for the betterment and the quality of life, for our life. There is no God taking care of me, I know this, outside of my own higher consciousness, which lives in the knowing that my source, for every possible waking imagining and every nighttime dream, lies in the belly of belief in a universe that is friendly, in a power that is loving, and a law that is constant, affirmative, and impersonal. So as we begin to awaken the awareness of our inherent philanthropic nature through understanding and practicing the law of giving and receiving, we are blessed tenfold by our own generosity. Generosity increases our ability to see what is not readily known. The greatest challenge to being generous in the midst of our own conflict, internal conflict or outer conflict, is the demand to look beyond the immediate situation. When hatred, rejection, or opposition are high, the credibility of loving connection is at its lowest. But when we allow ourselves to step aside from our pride and the vulnerability of our personality and surrender to the perfect work of our philanthropic nature, the smallest of actions will then take on great significance and our days will be jam-packed with meaning and purpose. In our spiritual practice today, Aya was talking about community. And all of us are drawn into spiritual community that are listening in this moment. Our instinctive nature calls out to one another because there is something of great and precious value that lives here. Whether we are aware or not, we have been drawn here to uncover the treasures that abound. Personally speaking, as a minister or spiritual leader, when I see myself as different than you, the congregation, I stop the movement of love, of reaching out for new co-conspirators of love as I go. And if you see yourself as different than me, the minister, you too have stopped the movement of love, of reaching out to experience what will send you soaring. So exercising our philanthropic nature in loving generosity has the ability to lift us up to a higher level where we are more human, more the person we really want to be. Each of us has the capacity within us, for we have life without end within us. All it takes is a willing spirit and the courage to be used for something greater than ourselves. Everything you were born to be, everything you've experienced in your lives, has been the perfect path for you now to make the choice to become a fuller expression of your loving, generous nature. So carry on, my co-conspirators. Discover that inherent philanthropic nature born within you. And enjoy the ride. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, columbiacsl.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@columbiacsl.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.